listen. Now I understand how a marvelous creation can shape the heart of a man. Now everything looks different. My perspective changed. I'll share all that I have, but first let's share my name. Show me how to love in that God kind of way. See me how you see me, makes my faith grow every day. You strengthen my ambitions, my perspective changed. I'll share all that I have, but first let's share my name.
What's in the name?
First gift you get at birth.
What's in the name?
Foretells your purpose and your worth.
What's in the name?
Your family is the name.
What's in the name?
Oh, a legacy. I see you as a diamond, precious one given to me. From the Father straight from heaven. Your life is my responsibility, which is required when it's given. The path God has for you is yours only. So from the bottom to the ceiling,
without the life before you, you wouldn't be.
What's in the name?
The first gift you get at birth.
What's in the name?
Foretells your purpose and your worth.
What's in the name? What's in the name?
Your legacy.
What's in the name?
The first gift you get at birth.
What's in the name?
Foretells your purpose and your worth.
What's in the name?
Your family is the way.
What's in the name?
That is real nice. Justin Gilbert, what's in a name? And welcome back to the Soul Savvy Show here on Studio W the Bloods, your global radio network. Back to you, Q, Lynn, and EB.
Yes, what you just heard was one of the singles called off his upcoming album. It's the single's called What's in Your Name. And we're joined by a veteran musician, composer, producer. He has so many amazing titles. It's professional titles, you know, getting a check. I love that part. That's my favorite part about saying it, getting a check. But, yes, he's played for and toured with Justin Timberlake, Alicia Keys, Jay-Z, Jill Scott, Anthony Hamilton. Listen, the credit names are endless. I'm just going to get to it. Y'all welcome on the show, Mr. Justin Gilbert. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey.
Yeah, we got that in the budget, so you just all the
class to y'all want me? Y'all love me?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Yo, what's up, you man? How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. This is what I've been looking forward to, because I have so many questions for you. I'm not going to try to drill you with 27 like I had. I just exited out 27. I've limited to 8 to 10. I'm trying to stick with it. I might have
okay.
more.
Okay, cool.
Yes, I'm not going to try to hold you up too long, but how are you doing tonight? I know you're busy, so thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm trying to, you know, figure out which way you're going. I think I just start from the beginning. I know you literally were born into music, you know, started playing when you were two, got that feeling to play and that musician, thing to play. But I want to know, what is your genesis of music? Like, what's your, if I should pinpoint, like, your Mount Rushmore of music to where it inclined you to be a musician?
Oh, that's a great question. I think my Mount Rushmore, it would probably, my mom's face would probably, adorn the sides of those rocks because, I was a choir baby growing up. You know what I mean? So my mom would direct the choir. So, I first started playing drums and it was an easy win for me because I was listening to the songs all the time because she had to learn them to teach the choir. So I kind of knew the songs. You know, somebody was late to rehearsal. I was like ready, just sitting in the wings, like ready with my sticks that were too big for my little self. And we would get it done. So, definitely being a choir baby was, and just church was my, introduction to music and, the vibes that it brung, the feeling that it brung and what it does, you know.
I feel like everybody that has played in church, we all have the same story because that's what I felt. Because it, like, I played jazz. I was jazz in classical training, but I didn't really start understanding music until I started playing gospel music in church. And it started making sense. And it was just the improv of it all. Like, just, you know, playing by ear and just learning the song. Just that energy of, like, you know, the spirit when it takes over. Like, you know what I mean? Prolonging, you know, chords and stuff like that, and dragging it, you know, you learn all that, those little nuances and stuff like that. So, but getting back to just sort of, when was it for you to where it started clicking off in your head to where you wanted to become a full-time musician?
You know, it's the funniest thing because, you know, of course, playing drums at two, and then, you know, being forcibly made to take these piano lessons starting around six or so, I would say, like, I was bucking against it and fighting it. And then when I got to be about 10 years old, 9 or 10, it started just really calling me to the point where I would just be on the piano at home, just our family piano, that's been passed down generations. And I'm just like picking out songs off the radio, and it was just getting inside me to the point where, you know, eventually I would come home from church and be trying to play the songs I heard at church and, you know, just picking up different things off of the radio. Once my mom finally let me stop the lessons because, like, I was such a, you know, hard head with it. And, I was a tough study to say the least. So, at first it was like really a chore. And then I just started feeling the vibration and just like getting into like what the instrument did and the way the songs made me feel. And, from there, it just went on and started growing. Then I started kind of wanting to be a little more serious. So I was like, let me play this instrument in school. Let me play the cello in school so I can get some more of this music up in me. Then it just went from there. Orchestral percussion all through high school. So timpani, xylophone, all that stuff. And, you know, then it just grows, you know how it is. So, you know, it's a calling, and once it calls you, you just can't quite leave that thing alone. It's a mistress, you know.
Woo! You're speaking to my spirit right now. You're talking directly to me. I feel like it's a mirror of the same because I 100% like relate to that. But I was going to get to when was it? Was it any specific genre or anything particular to where your ear was drawn to it? Like, when you started out, were you just going with a specific genre, like gospel music, or was it like everything that you were trying to do whenever you, I mean, professionally wise, was it a specific one, or was it just any gig? Cause you know, like, you know, when you get into it, you just want to take any gig, like back in, you know, you're like, you know, you're trying to figure it out, but was it anything in particular, or was it a specific genre that you were set in playing?
I think, initially, of course, it was the gospel thing. And, my folks, you know, they were like, you know, a little churchy. So it was always good gospel around, but they would listen to the radio, you know, every morning. So the R&B stuff. So it was like R&B and just whatever songs were huge at the time, kind of poppy stuff would be around. So I always liked big songs. And, I can remember like, before I even knew what a chord was, just kind of knowing when like a movement, some piece of music had a certain something on it. Like, I remember being a kid and hearing, No Rhyme, No Reason by George Duke, and just the way those melodies and those harmonies, those chords and the singing and how everything just was meshing together for me. And I didn't even know what I was feeling. I was just like, oh my God, this is that song. I don't know what it is about that song. I can listen to that song every day. I can still listen to it now. The Optimistic song, you know what I'm saying, by Sounds of Blackness. Like those were the songs. It was like, whoa, like, oof, just, I can't get enough. So it was like a lot of soul music, lots of gospel. It was some classical in there because my mom, it was very important for her to, for us, our family to be exposed, to multiple things and, you know, and an array of different music. So she would make sure that we would go check out the Glee Club performances at Spelman and Morehouse as children. You know what I mean? So I would hear a pipe organ on occasion. You know, she wanted to make sure that my ear, you know, I could appreciate, diverse musical stylings. So, you know, it was all around, but mainly the gospel and the soul and some pop stuff was what I grew up on.
Nice. What was your first professional gig, like getting into the music industry?
Ooh, okay. First one, let's see. First one I can remember, like coming from church, one of the first gigs I had was I was doing a there was this show called Unforgettable, and it was with this really amazing actor named Monroe Kent III, and it was like a one-man show. But basically, it was the story of Nat King Cole, right? So this guy, he was doing all of the characters. It was really amazing to watch. Like, he was very entertaining. One-man show, he's, you know, turning around, putting on glasses, bam. It was really, really good. And so this gave me an opportunity, like an introduction to theater type stuff. So, you know, I was getting some good experience. So I'm reading these charts. I'm figuring out the vibes of like and how to be versatile and disciplined enough to stay inside of a particular vibe. You know what I mean? So that was super good training for me. This was Unforgettable, the Nat King Cole story. Featuring Monroe Kent, and it was just, it was three people on stage. It was Monroe, Mr. Kent, it was myself and four people, an upright bass player and a guitarist, Edison Herbert, and, he was the MD, and, you know, I learned so much on that gig, and it was one of the first opportunities that I had to travel, around the States and get my weight up, you know?
Right. I want to know, in terms of like your playing, when was it? I think with music, I think my focus came different when I started meditating more and like in a spiritual way. And I always quote Sonny Rollins. He has like this amazing quote. He said that he would just play the those measures as good as he could, and then he would just let the feeling take over. Basically, is what he was saying. So, and he would talk about how like yoga and meditating helps him focus. How is anything like spiritual help you focus to become a better musician?
I definitely think that meditation is a tool that so many people that I use, and you know, and I think it's been helpful to a lot of people that use it, because this music, this playing, this painting these musical pictures, like, this is spiritual, and it's all an extension of the spirit, you know what I mean? And it's a vibration that we are sharing with people, you know what I mean? And that's the essence and the beauty of it, like being able to get those feelings from the inside and somebody else feeling that vibe, like, you know, when you're performing or just, you know, they're listening to your records and like, ooh, like I feel that on the inside, you know. And I think that meditation definitely helps, you know what I mean? And the spirit, that's who we are. That's our intention. You know, when I hear that word spirit, I think of the word intention. Like, what spirit are we doing things in? And, you know, I'm a person that's full of joy. I love to laugh. I love to celebrate. I love to learn. And, you know, when I'm giving this music from my soul, you know, these are all the vibrations that people are hearing and the things that I've learned, things that I've experienced. And, they get to feel my joy. You know what I mean?
Yes. And yeah, cause there's a musician that quoted and I'll just to paraphrase a little bit. He was saying that it's like, you know, like certain musicians, like a guitar player, like you hear, like your ear is tuned to how it's supposed to play, but it's like, it's something like they're playing the right chords, but it's like the feeling is missing behind it. And then when you meet that one musician that's like, you, like they feel every chord that they're playing and you just feel the energy, like you, that's what you just said hits like right onto that. I feel like that's like 100% factual. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
To get into how you started producing and composing, your debut album came out in 2015, right? The Align.
2015.
I loved it.
Yep.
Thank you
so much.
And you had, you know, everybody on there, PJ Moore, you know, the musicians, you know, all the with Tennessee Kids and all that on there.
Yeah.
Like, what was that, the concept behind making that album in terms of your composing and producing? Like, how did all that creatively come to you to create that album?
That was, you know, Aligned, even though it was the first album that I had ever released, it was maybe my second or third attempt at putting an album together. And, you know, everyone, like all of the players, there's so many players and so many professional musicians and so many people that, you know, choose this lifestyle. But not too many people actually explore their own artistry and try to, you know, get that stuff from the inside to the outside world and make it something that people can feel, make something that's tangible for people. So I, you know, for years, you know, I was kind of wrestling with different approaches and like, where do I start? What do I play? You know, I read some quotes like from Gonzalo Rubalcaba about, he said, like, a musician should play the music that makes him cry. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you should play the music that you feel the most. And, for me, you know, coming up, it was all about versatility and being able to put on different hats, being able to play a montuno, but being able to play a nice, you know, shout bump, you know, for the mothers too. And so I was like, I was wrestling with which way to go with it. So with my first album, I was honestly just exploring my own artistry and playing a whole bunch of stuff that I liked. And I said, I'll let people gravitate towards whatever they gravitate to. And, you know, then we'll just kind of go from there. And, you know, that was the thinking, like, let me just kind of, this is everything that I like. Let me share it and we'll see, we'll put it out in the universe and see what happens. So that was the thinking behind it. It's like, I felt like coming to that place of releasing an album, I knew it was like, it was special too, because, the circumstances kind of leading up to it, I had some pretty life-changing experiences that led up to it to let me know, that there was something inside of me that needed to be explored. Like I had my life attempted, and that totally shook my core. Like, to have someone shoot a gun in your face, you know what I'm saying? And you duck in just enough time to you know what I'm saying, to make it. So I had that experience, and it made me start soul searching and really questioning, like, what am I here for? Why was I born? Like, what's going on here? Like, why didn't I just die right then? Because everything looked like it should have happened totally. Like, it should have ended right then. So, so then I started raising the questions, like, what am I doing? What am I here to do? And it started being apparent to me that, you know, my gift, this gift was meant to be shared. This gift needed to be given. And, I started exploring it from there. And, you know, of course, like I was saying, I didn't know which way to go with it. So I just put together a compilation of things that I love to play and songs that I wrote and songs that a couple of my friends wrote. And there it was, aligned, October of 2015.
Wow. So a purpose-driven album, that's what Align was with that and with the whole project.
Indeed.
Wow. That, you know, and it's crazy because when you talk about, like I love albums. I love albums because, you know, it, you know, this day and time people are so worried about singles and singles meeting on the charts and streaming and stuff like that, but they never have a cohesive album that makes sense. And the thing is what I can already tell from just listening when I was listening to Align, it's just a concept album that it cohesively makes sense. You know what I mean? Just the texture of how you're playing the chords, just the theme of the song, whatever the song is called, it's like, I feel it. And it's like, not even just from a musician technical term, cause it took me a while to get past each song. And I'm like, that's how you know an album is good, when you be like, hold on, how did he play that chord? Cause that's what's going through my head. I'm like, what was that? What is these sounds that I'm hearing right now? But just the spiritual aspect to it, and just everything that you're saying, like, was conveyed through that album, and it's just from, like, intently listening in, that's what I felt, listening to it. And it's so many great, man, you had so many, the smoking coffee, oh my goodness. Listen, the smoking coffee is probably my top favorite one. I have like a top five on it. I feel like the whole album is great, but the smoking coffee, it's just something about it. I keep going back to it. I don't know if I want smoke and coffee. I don't feel like that's my life. My life ritual. That's not part of my life ritual, but just something about the vibe of it. I rock with it.
Yeah,
but I only got a few more questions, and I'm going to kick it to my co-host, EB, and he has some questions for you. But mine's almost, I'm almost done with mine. But what was your focus when you first started playing versus now, like as a veteran? Like when did that light bulb hit to where you felt like you fully knew, you know, because you're a musician, you know, like when you fully like accepted that you're a musician, because you know, sometimes it's like, you know, I know for me, when I didn't fully accept it until like my 10th year in professionally. Yeah. And then I was like, I accepted it. But I feel like the years before was just me studying the music.
Wow.
And so I don't count it. So do you ever have those moments, or have you had that moment yet where you feel like you like clone who you are, like, you know who you are as a musician?
I do. I actually know what you mean. Like, when you were first asking about, like that kind of, that coming, that moment of awareness. Like, okay, wait, okay, we're here. It makes me think about some of my earlier touring experiences. And I can remember being the new guy. In things that, you know, where people have been there and been in position for years. So I was the new guy. So my focus at first was, me and me being on point, me, you know, doing what we rehearsed, me doing me and everything. And then eventually I got into the conversation of the music and playing with music with other people. And I started being able to listen to everyone and everything that's happening. And then, you know, me and my gift being able to respond to what's happening. And that's when it became like a full circle thing. Like, oh my God, like this is a gift and it's meant to be shared. This is, I got to give this gift. But in order for me to give it, I have to be attentive to everything else around me that's going on so that, you know what I mean? So that I find ways to fit and I'm able to, you know, do things that, you know, are interesting. But it's all in context. So for me, the aha moment was when I stopped focusing so much on me and my performance and started inviting in everyone else's performance along with mine and listening and responding and being in the moment. and, you know, being able to do what I heard in my head. You know, that was the thing.
You know, what you just said there was so important, because it's a lot of young musicians now, they feed off of musicians' critical viewpoint and how they play and just the show part of it. And they don't, I just feel like what you just said was so important, because it's a lot of young musicians that write into our show and, you know, have these questions. And I feel like you just answered it all right there. And I say it all the time. It's like when you focus, it's not even about, like, they weren't about the views. If you're posting on social media or the I feel like it's just that, like, interacting with the musicians. Like, what's the bass player doing? The drummer? What's the driven, the focus on this song? If it's an original song, what's the focus in the song? That's how I compact, you know, decompact songs. Yeah. Like, what is this song focused on? Okay, it's piano driven. Okay, am I playing the piano part? Okay, the drum part, what is the drum part doing? Is it more drums? Is it more bass? That's what I, and I feel like whatever that is, you just fill in that space or whatever that was needed, and then cohesively. Yeah, and it's a lot of musicians don't understand that. You know, not the, you know, so dig the chop, you know, the chops, you know, musicians, you know, no disrespect to y'all, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, the ones that like to do the extra licks and runs and stuff like that. I'm not, you know, no, this is, I'm just saying pocket, you know. I feel like pocket is everything. So, but I was going to ask, is there, since we're on this, is there, this is some musician nerd stuff. They'll rock with, the listening audience rock with what I'm saying. Is there a key that you used to hate playing in that you play now, or is it like opposite?
That's a great question. Now I don't so much think in terms of key. It's more like like temperature and shape. It's like I don't even think
about what I'm
playing or what it is. It's like I can just kind of apply the thought. It's a strange thing, because I remember, like, you know, growing up in church, you know, we used to have these jokes like, you know, D is the devil, E is evil, and, what they say, A is the adversary.
Yes.
B is
I know what you're talking about.
It's wrong. You know what I'm saying? Stay out of there. So like initially I loved like Black Keys, and then I was Baptist. Like, I grew up Baptist, so I like G. I don't know. I like that. I don't know why, but it was just the thing. Like, just when I started just getting into it and just playing more and start being aware of just like the whole conversation elements of the music and just being in the vibe, being in the vibration, creating a vibration, I stopped thinking so much about key. You know, in like those performance things. Now, I do think, when in writing, like, you know, of course, when you hear, you have something in your ear, that tune, like, it's like, that's important, because, you know, those things make for a certain feeling. Like, it could change the whole situation if it's a half step up or a half step lower. It's like, so, you know, I'm in those moments in the creative stages, you know, that's the only time when I'm kind of, you know, particular about that sort of thing. But, you know, the rest of the time, it's just, they all 12, they all the same. It's all good.
Right. You answered that perfectly. Because it's just more of the growth factor. It's mostly when I started, it's like, you know, particular, it's mostly my taste and like certain, it's like, I don't really like the key that's in. It's sort of that thing. done with this tour, I feel like needs to be applauded, because what you've accomplished in that alone. When I say these things, people just think it's just some words that I'm just saying. Like, this man did 3-leg tour, like, in a year. Do you understand the words that just came out of my mouth? 100 shows. Like, do you understand the dedication, the work efficiency that it takes to do that as a musician? And it just speaks to the level of the just your professionalism and your skill and your talent to be able to do that. So I wanted you to speak on that a little bit. The pressures from the tour, like everything you had to, because you had to have a life after that too. You know, it's a long year tour. You know, got to deal with family, you know, family yeah. situations and personal stuff, dealing with your own battles. Like, how did you get through that tour? You know.
Oh my goodness. That's a great question. I mean, you know, in this musician life, like, we unfortunately don't have the luxury of cutting off regular life to complete a task. So all of these things are happening, you know, at the same time, and it's a juggling act. But you know, as you live and you learn, you know, you get. You learn how to maneuver things a little better. Like, I remember, like, on my first tours, you know, you come home, your light may be off, your grass was up to your waist, you know what I'm saying? But now, you know, I'm a little smarter about it. Hey, Dad, can you go pick up my mail? Cool. Go do this. Can someone go do this? I need this done. Or, you know, like, it's so much that goes into, like, being away from home for an extended amount of time. And, you know, now that I've been doing this a while, I know how to navigate and rock my schedule so that I can get home, you know, when there are, you know, more than 3 off days, like, I'm probably going to come home. You know what I mean? Just to slide home, get home and, you know, check on things, kiss my baby, you know, go, you know, do what's important and then get right back to it. So, it certainly, you know, lots of prayer. But good friends and good family that are able to kind of pick up the slack and take care of things for you and be the point person for things at home is super important. And I definitely wouldn't be able to do what I do, you know, without, you know, my family and, you know, loved ones supporting me, you know, that way when I'm away from home. So it's a trip. It's a trip, as you can imagine.
Listen, I tell you now while you're on air, job well done, because everything, I've heard rave reviews. I was so mad I didn't get to go to one of those concerts as I want to. But I've went in the past when he did the 2020 experience. I went on those tours. So I've got it. I just haven't listened to the new album that he dropped, you know, last year, whatever, Man of the Woods. But I have went to a JT concert. Y'all were killing. Listen, getting to the awards show aspect of your career, you work a lot. I know I've seen recently with Adam Blackstone, BB All-Stars Band. How did that come about? What was your first, award show with him? Or your own, because I know you're music director as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I've learned so much from Adam. He is, you know, the bar, like, at this point. He's a people person, and he knows how to get the best out of people. I met Adam many moons ago. Like, we were, our first thing together was, like, Jill Scott. So I met Adam around 2008. And, we've just been building from there, and, you know, just, you know, he would help me out here. He would call me for certain things. I'd help him out. And we just built that chemistry and then that brotherhood and that trust. And so when he started moving more into the television sector, you know, he trusted me, and those opportunities trickled right down to me. And I think the first thing we did together, I want to say it was like a NAACP Image Awards thing. I kind of remember. I feel like we were so young and so different then, but it was great. And then we started, you know. It was a lot. It seemed like a lot of pressure then, but then it's like the more you do it, it becomes a thing, and you know what to expect. And you know, I was laughing with a couple guys the other week about how people handle the countdown. Like, you know, the five and five, we're going live. 5, 4, 3. How people can handle that, or some people can really, you know, the pressure of it can kind of overwhelm them and get them off their square where they're not able to do what they rehearsed. So we've been doing this thing for a while, and so we've got just a little system. You know, we work hard at the beginning of the week to prepare, and then, you know, by the time showtime comes, it's all just muscle memory and fun and being in the moment and responding to what everybody's doing. So, it, you know, Adam Blackstone is certainly, he's a gem of a human being, and one of the coldest bass players and coldest music directors, period. He's very organized, and he's, you know, he knows what he's doing, and he's very efficient, and I love him, and I'm just grateful to you know, be around that and to glean things from him and to have his trust and that sort of thing. So it's a blessing.
But I think the one where I noticed you was the Summer Block concert when y'all were playing for Jill Scott. I remember
okay.
that. I was like, yeah, this pianist is cold.
Wow.
It was just the expressiveness of how you play, the style. You know what I mean? Because musicians have a certain style, and I felt like yours was coming across. Because it's like you hear these songs so many times, but just the way you're playing it, is the feeling is conveying me as just the listening audience. And then when I saw you on TV, it was the, I think you had, were playing with, that I think I've seen you many a times on award shows, but the one in particular where I really started, I was like, all right, this is it. This is top five right now. Was the, I think it was, what was the year when Justin did the 2020 experience, the Grammys performance?
Yeah.
Was it 2013?
2013, I think 2013.
Or 2012? Yes, it was when I saw that. It was, I'm going to tell you the moment when y'all did, when y'all segued the melody of Push Your Love Girl. I was like,
okay.
When y'all got to the bridge of that, when y'all getting ready to go to the I was like, because you were all the way in, like you were locked in. It's the musician thing to the listening audience to where it just, it feels like the whole focus was just in that moment of the groove of the song. Everybody's locked in. And you were just locked in. It was just the expressiveness of how you were playing. I was like, this is just cold-blooded right now.
Cold-blooded. I'll never forget that.
It just felt like everything, like I feel like, the reason why I say I feel like y'all the baddest band in the land because everybody's always in sync. You know, I can name a few more just to, you know, alleviate doubt if I'm not going to do that. But I'm just saying for this moment, the Tennessee Kids is the baddest band in the land. And I would say just from your aspect as a musician, when you're playing award shows, when you're playing stadiums, arenas, or theaters, or if it's just a small spot just working out new music, what's the intent? Is the attention different depending on the size of the venue, or is it just the same? Like, you know, in terms of the acoustics of the room, if you're like, put that in, or the audience, if it's like close up, or if it's far, like, is the intention different, or is it all the same?
That's, no, I think there are some things, that, you know, veteran musicians understand about the size of a venue. Like for instance, like if you're playing Wembley Stadium, you don't as a drummer, you don't go for the fast feel. You know what I mean? Because that stuff kind of gets lost in translation because the space is so large. And you know, you got to remember that there's a time delay. So by the time that thing gets to the back of the room, you're already bars ahead. So that could sound like a catastrophe to someone in the listening audience. You know what I mean? So it would behoove players to kind of keep it kind of real solid, like, you know what I mean, in those stadium situations. There's nothing like, I appreciate playing stadiums, I appreciate, you know, arenas, but there's nothing like playing an intimate crowd where, you know, you can almost reach out and touch people or...
When they're yelling at you, like, play that, and they just, you be in a moment, and then somebody just yell out, and it's like, oh, okay, because they react to whatever it is that you're doing in the moment. It's so fun.
Yeah, because they're right here with us. And,
yes,
and
right.
So I love those situations where we can be up close, and it's definitely, I think the focus is still to convey the messages of the music. So, like, whatever music is going forth, you know, especially if there is an artist or singer up front, there's a story being told. And I know for me, the focus is embodying that story and making sure that my musical, you know, the musical underscore complements what that's saying. Like, you know, I can't be playing like a Jill Scott song about, you know, someone, you know, a cheating lover and be smiling hard. You know what I'm saying? It's like, no, I need to
right.
embody what this song is talking about and produce, underscore what that is. And, you know what I'm saying, know the song well enough and be comfortable enough with the stuff to be able to express, but inside of the confines and the context of what that song is talking about. So I don't think the thinking changes. I don't think the thinking should change so much or the focus, but I do think people have to be mindful about playing the room, because, you know, it makes no sense to be playing loud in a small space. Like, no, I'd rather people have to listen. So I'll turn down a little bit. You have to stick right. your head in. Like, you know, hey, what's happening? Like, so, no, that's what I'm thinking about it.
I just have two more, and then I'll let my co-host go. In terms of, like, your music directing, what do you enjoy most about doing that? And then what have you learned from? Have you looked at, just overall as a musician, have you looked at, like, just composing, doing music differently, doing that? Cause that's like a hard job to do that. So has it changed your viewpoint on anything musically?
I think, I do think it has, it's affected my approach, in terms of, you know, there's something magical that happens when, you know, a musician knows what everybody is doing or what everyone is supposed to be doing. You know what I mean? Whether you're reading a score or you've learned these songs, you've got these songs in your spirit. So you know what the bass player is doing, to the point where you could double his bass line on the piano bass and just make it even fatter. You know what I'm saying? Based on what it is. There's something special about that. And I think, you know, once I started getting trusted to be the musical director in these scenarios, I brought that thing. I was able to take away that understanding of understanding what everyone's pocket was doing, and apply that to my own music, where I'm making pockets and I know exactly what every musician is doing. It's not left to chance. It's not just the vibe. Like, even inside of the vibe, there's a pocket. You know what I mean? So
yes.
That was the thing, like, that music director opportunities gave me. It just gave me an awareness, more of an awareness about how everyone fits in the grand scheme of things.
Then my last one is kind of similar to this one, but it's a little different in terms of, like, what have you learned from when you first started as a musician that you know now that you implement or that you do better when you're performing live in front of an audience?
Oh, man. I mean, so many things. I'm trying to think of where to start. I guess, you know, so I'm thinking, you know, when I first started, you know, I'm just this young kid, kind of an upstart, new face, you know, and then now, you know, I'm in what some people would consider, you know, my prime. I would consider my prime. And I think I think about what that word prime means. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you're an infant, the prime is the convergence of your energy and your wisdom. And as an infant, your energy is on a million, but your wisdom is on zero. You know what I'm saying? So as you grow in wisdom and you get to be a teenager, now your energy is slightly declined, but, you know, now they're getting close. Now you're like, you know, your mid-20s or early 30s, and they're just right there together. And so, you know, you move differently. You know how to stay out of the way. You know what's safe. You know how to approach things in a way that garners the best results. And, you know how to be consistent. You know all the ropes. So now I just do things, you know, assessing things through that lens. Like, you know, it's nothing. Experience is like you can't. It's tough to even put into words like what that means, because it's certain habits and a certain approach to life, you know, that helps you to stay on the cutting edge and helps you to, you know, be trusted that way. And you know, I'm excited because I get to stay in my prime. You know, in this field, you get to stay in your prime as long as you want. You just have to keep recreating yourself and understanding what the newness is. So I still go on YouTube and check out younger guys and, you know, to see what's going on. And I have an 11-year-old, so he teaches me all the hot dance moves, so I know how to shoot, I know how to do all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's part of it, just recreating and staying with it and staying in step with what's popping off.
Right. You go ahead, Evie.
EB, what's up?
So I'm a huge fan, and I think reading your bio, the first word that came to mind was, the first phrase that came to mind was musical prodigy. Do you consider yourself as such, or do you acknowledge that?
I can certainly say I'm honored to be, described that way. I guess I didn't think of myself that way, just because looking through my lens, you know, it was always, you know, kind of uphill to me. Like I was always, you know, challenging myself or being challenged with the lessons and things that, you know, people wanted me to be able to do. So I didn't think of myself as like cutting edge that way, where it's like, whoa, dude, this dude has a handle on something major. Until I got much older. So I'm certainly honored to even be thought of that way, man. Thank you so much, brother.
Yeah, no, you, I mean, not only do you exhibit this extreme musical ability, but your philosophy and your thought process, they contribute to why I've attached that label to you. I'm listening to you speak so eloquently about music and about theory and about your experiences, and they all add up to me to be what a musical prodigy is. Is there an instrument that you don't play that you like to spend time with?
Oh man. You know what? Just in a perfect world, and I don't even know if this is for real, but for the sake of the conversation, like if I could play guitar, man, like if I could just like shred like a guitar solo one time, you know, like,
you know what's crazy? They say it's easy. They say, you know what they say? It's easy, but they'll never show you. I hate when they say that. They like, oh, it's so easy. It took me 10 years. I've been trying to play the basic guitar for 10 years. I just now started playing because I waited on a bass player or a guitar player to show me how to play. I hate when they say that. It is easy.
I want one of them, like the knee grabber solos, or like play with my mouth. In a perfect world, that would be fun to do, I think. You know what I mean? And I don't know how to play the guitar at all. So that's what I'm dealing with.
I mean, I'm sure you can get that. I mean, you've got everything else. Like we share the only instrument I play, I tell people, I play the cello, but that's it. And
oh man,
when I noticed that you did,
he plays the cello too, Justin.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was like,
yeah.
I was like, oh look, finally somebody else. Because I remember, when I started playing in like the third grade, I remember being in this classroom with all of these woodwind instruments, and there were four black boys, and three of us were on cello, and one was on viola. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And two of us stuck with it, and everybody else was like, nah, I'm done after like 2 years. But maybe it was my parents that made me stick with it. I don't know. They paid their money. who have you been most impressed by professionally throughout your journey?
Great question. Oh my gosh. Whew. There's so many people that have influenced me. I would say most impressed by throughout my journey. Meaning, I can take that a couple ways. Like there is one individual that comes to mind. This person is actually my muse, and you know, actually, you know, at the same time, they are the fruit of my loins. Like my son, as I've been able to grow, he keeps me inspired, and watching him grow and knowing that he's watching me and taking cues from me, that helps to keep me grounded and inspired.
Oh.
So, you know, that's the first person that comes to mind. As far as a musician or a fellow creative, it's so many people, but I think Adam Blackstone is certainly one that I've been inspired by continually. And just watching his work ethic and watching how, you know, he's on the cutting edge. And, you know, nothing is different about what he's doing. It's just now more people are aware of it. So that's the beautiful thing, and that's something that, you know, I think people should know. Like, you know, this isn't new. You know, he's not new to this. He's just true to this. And the authenticity, I think, you know, creates a path and it creates something that's just, you know, larger than life. So, yeah, definitely my son and Adam Blackstone.
All right, we're going to get Adam's people to write you a check. Adam's people, please give us a call at the Soul Savages Radio Show. I have two more questions for you.
Okay.
So with the wide range of genres and the plethora of artists that you've worked with, or, I mean, not even worked with, but that you listen to, you were listing some, like, influences and inspirations, who would people be surprised to know that you listen to or that you draw inspiration from?
That's another great question. I listen to so many cats. Let me see. I know that, I don't know. I'm a huge Steely Dan fan. Donald Fagen. And then of course I'm drawing blank on a couple of names of like albums that I was listening to early on. What is her name? Oh gosh, this woman's name is escaping me. But I'm trying to sing the song to myself.
I hear it. I love it. Come on, let's do it. Let's go.
I haven't heard the song so long. Oh my God, what is her name? She's a guitarist.
She's black. She's white.
She's a white woman.
Is it Bonnie Raitt? Is it?
Nope.
Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah.
Love Bonnie.
Love Bonnie.
That was the first guitarist that was like, oh yeah, that's it. Nah.
Oh my God, if I say her name.
What genre is it?
It's like kind of poppy. It's kind of singer-songwriter, but from a guitar perspective.
And she's older?
She is older now. Certainly, she's much older now.
Is it Joni Mitchell? Is it?
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
Joni Mitchell.
Thank you, man.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Thank you, yo.
I was going to say that.
You're the man.
No, Joni is, I think people will be surprised to know, you know, just how instrumental Joni Mitchell has been in the music of black folk. Because I know Shaka at this point is working on a collaboration album or doing a cover album of Joni Mitchell songs that Joni's actually working with her on it. So I think that's amazing that you even mentioned her, because she is, in my opinion, one of the great songwriters, a guitarist, yes, but songwriter as well. Like she, like the way that she, her interpretation of song is utterly amazing. So I appreciate that. And my last question for you is, everyone has a different process of putting together an album, you know, from conceptualizing it to actually going into the studio to releasing it. What is your process like?
It's process for me, for my records has been one where, I would just create and then narrow things down. Like, I never, you know, with the exception of like my first record, that first record was very focused in terms of what was going to be on it. Like, I just kind of knew, like, I knew these 10 songs. Some by these 10 songs, you know, I didn't necessarily go above and beyond, but like, for my holiday album, you know, there were a couple of songs that didn't make it, but these songs seemed to work best, just in a cohesive, manner to be a full project. And even with my forthcoming record, Questionic, dropping on August 9th, I created so much other music, you know what I'm saying? But this is for right now, this is the statement that I'm making. These are the songs that are the soundtrack to my life. Like, this is what I'm on right now. This is what I'm saying. So, typically it's like, you know, create, and then, you know, narrow it down later and figure out what fits. And then, you know, of course, all the while being clear on what you're presenting and, you know, the name of the record. You know, that kind of comes about before that process of eliminating and trimming the fat, you should say. So, I'm
so
just
you tailor the structure and the, I mean, well, yeah, I guess the individual songs, but also the structure to, whatever the name of the record is.
Yeah. Yeah, to a degree. I think, because it all kind of guides when it's thought out well, and there's a thinking to it, and some, you know, some explanation where you've thought about these things or written them out, like, okay, you know, this is what I'm thinking. It all kind of comes together in this miraculous way where you know it fits, like, you just know, you can feel it.
Wow. Amazing. I think you are, and don't take this the wrong way. People take it, you know, different ways when you say it, but, one of the, younger musicians who I look forward to see growing. I look forward to seeing, what you have to bring to the table or how you will influence someone else. I do look forward to it, and I appreciate your artistry and your drive, because I think that's something that we don't see a lot of on the mainstream level. And since we don't see it on the mainstream level, people don't think that it exists anymore. And you're proving that it does, in fact, exist. Not only does it exist, but that is a type of musicianship that is actually excelling now. And I think it's important for us, not only as musicians or music lovers or music aficionados or even the general public, to appreciate that, but just to acknowledge that it's happening and you are here. So thank you.
Man, thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
And we're going to play the game with you real quick before we let you go. It's called the What's Wrong With You game. But before I get there, I only got one little question. Rick James has this quote in his, I read his biography book, and it said, "I need more fire in my rock and more funk in my folk." And it, for me, is just something musically clicked in my head that made me connect the musical dots in terms of his, what his inspiration was and then what his inspiration was. So what do you take away from that kind of quote like that?
More.
That's
fire.
How I see music. Right. More fire in my rock. Yes.
More fire in my rock. Okay.
Fire in my rock and more funk in my folk.
More funk in my folk.
Right.
Funk and my folk. I take that as Rick is trying to feel something. Rick is trying to feel the person that's presenting the art. He wants to feel the art.
Woo! You're talking right.
That's what I take that as.
You're talking right. That's exactly how I connected with that. That's exactly how I thought that. Man.
You're
talking right.
He wants to feel your experiences. He wants to feel your essence. come through on whatever you're doing. So it's like, you know, when you said folk, for some reason I started thinking about Joni again and the way that those songs kind of touch you, and it's like a journey. It's something about that. And I would say her folk is funky. I don't know.
It is.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Listen, you're talking right. This is how I know. Okay, I feel like I got a musical kindred spirit on right now. But how we play this game, this What's Wrong With You game, is basically either or. And the business is basically you have to pick everything that I pick. It's judgmental game. I make up the rules as I go. And
the game is rigged. Justin, I'm sorry. You know,
he's not speaking facts on this. It's absolutely
okay.
Not
I'm the engineer, producer, president of Studio W Buzz. Please, this woman has no credibility when it comes to this game. This game is real.
Nobody's lost this game, Justin. Listen to what I'm saying. Okay. Nobody's lost the game, Justin. Okay.
You make up the rules as you go.
Listen, one of the rules is...
The game is rigged, Justin. Trust me on this.
Where's the mute button at? We got it. Listen.
Justin, the game is rigged.
The only rule of the game is that you have to pick stuff that's on your playlist. Who do you listen to more of on your playlist? That's the only defining rule of this game. And so the first is Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Marvin Gaye.
You're talking right. The next one is the OJs or the Whispers?
Or,
yes.
Is that an option? Because you did say
the OJ or
was my answer.
Or you know what? That's a trick question anyway. Because either way you could have won. You would have got it right. So you talking right? You get bonus points for that. You get a bonus 25.
I get the OJs. That. I love LeVert and his dad. Like they's my people.
Listen,
either way,
like I said, I make up the rules as I go. So those are trick questions. You didn't either one of those you could have got right. Or Prince or Rick James.
Oh God, Prince.
There you go. You're talking right. Okay, now this is part of the game where it gets intense, and you got to get all these right, or you know what's wrong with you. This one is Patty or Aretha.
Listen, before you answer this, I want you to think long and hard. I want you to think. I want you to just
don't mess up this vibration. I feel like the frequency is at its level is where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm scared, dog. Scared. He's okay.
No.
Oh man.
Okay. Okay. I think I'm ready.
Come on.
Can I go with like a C, like Patty and Aretha?
No. You
got to pick one or the other.
You got to pick
one
or the other.
Okay, we'll go with Aretha because I can get
That's
one.
Right. Aretha?
No.
That's right. Oh, no.
No.
This man right here.
I knew this was a gamble round. This is going to go the wrong way when he jumped in. As soon as EB jumped in, I knew this was going to go the wrong way. Listen,
Music catalog. We go about catalog. And he said Aretha.
Evie, Kayete.
Ooh.
Justin. Aretha or Patty? Who do you listen to more in your playlist? Do you have more Patty songs or more Aretha songs?
Didn't I just answer this?
Yes, she's trying to rig the game. I told you the game is rigged.
You got more Aretha. Amy, okay. No, here's another rule of the game. If you pick the wrong one, you gotta give me five songs. Give me five Aretha songs in 15 seconds.
No,
that's part of the reason.
No.
Give me five songs in 15 seconds. Give me five Aretha songs. Right
no, that's voter tampering.
Stop talking. Started.
Okay, say a little prayer.
Down to 9 seconds.
It's a lot of pressure all of a sudden.
5 seconds.
Yeah, I'm probably not gonna make it.
Voter tampering. That's voter tampering. That's voter tampering. I told you the game was rigged.
It's not voter tampering.
It is voter tampering.
Ask him to name five Patti LaBelle songs. Nobody can do that.
Listen, name five Patti LaBelle songs.
Okay, Blessed. Let's go with.
This is voter manipulation. Voter manipulation.
No, it's not.
5 seconds.
And then I remember the changes, but that don't help.
Okay. All right. You ain't going to get a What's Wrong With You, but you definitely going to get a negative 12 points on that one. Okay. you're not going to all the way lose this, but you get a negative 12. And so the last one, because we got to go in a few minutes, Brad McKnight or Babyface?
Babyface.
That's right.
There you go. You're talking right. And then this is just a bonus. Faith Evans and Mary J. Blige, vocally.
Be careful again. Be careful.
Oh, come on. Well, you did say vocally.
No, we
yes.
said cattle.
Yes,
okay,
vocally.
Okay, that.
Go
that
ahead.
Too. Whatever. I'm confident.
Okay, I mean,
but
it depends on what you're into. Okay.
Okay, that's right.
Come on with it. Faith Evans and Mary J. Blige. Let's get
it. Well, we know what he's going to say. You won, Q-Lin.
No, but see,
we bring
a
Faith
in.
The one with the undisputed greatest debut album of all time. Is that who you picking?
Are you picking the Living Legend Academy Award winning writer and actress?
Are you picking the 2018 Soul Train Award winner?
Are you picking
the 2018 Soul Train Award? Don't discount
award winner. Come on.
Listen, she won the Living Legend Soul Train Award. That counts for everything.
Who got the best
game? She got Grammy.
Who got the best beat game?
Listen.
The best what?
She picked Faith, so you picked Faith.
Best boot game?
You picked Faith.
Oh, easily. It's Mary all day.
Mary all day. Listen.
Mary all day.
I told you.
Okay, so that was a bonus, so you get a negative 35 because you didn't even answer that right the way you're supposed to.
I told you it was rigged.
Been deducted, so you got an extra negative 10 points because you had an extra 25.
Oh, my God.
What?
Justin?
No,
that don't count. Listen, you didn't lose the game. You just lost some points. You could have won. That was a bonus, so it don't even count anyway. I'm not accepting that because you picked Faith. You picked Faith anyway. I heard it in your voice. You took 20 minutes to answer that, so I know you picked Faith. Faith all day. Okay.
Mary. I'm just saying, he picked the royal.
Well, I've concluded.
You went with the 18.
And what's wrong with you, game? That there is nothing wrong.
This is the most.
Justin Gilbert, a.k.a. Bishop. Ain't nothing all
right.
wrong with
okay.
him.
Great.
Because right, you picked Faith Evans.
But this is
that
the most.
That counts for everything.
The most corrupt game
listen,
on the planet.
Listen, thank you so much for coming on the show, putting up with our foolishness, our foolish game that we like having fun with. Let the people know where they can, I know you have a new album coming out, Questphonic on August 9th. How can people, let people know where they can find that album?
Listen, you'll be able to find it anywhere quality music is sold online. I'll also have a physical copy, so if you run up on me somewhere, I'm sure they'll be available online, all that information. You can find on my website, www.justingilbertnow.com, and you can follow me on the networks, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm on there at Just One Gil, JUS1GIL. So, you know what I'm saying, I'll definitely keep you abreast of what's to come. It's going to be magical.
Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. Make sure y'all follow Justin on every social media outlet or Justin One Gil at Twitter and Instagram. Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like you're just a testament of what hard dedication, work efficiency is, and just your dedication to the art craft is shown through with every work that you're on, whether you're touring, on an award show, it shines through. You're one of the top five. For me, top five out here.
Thank you so much. Honored by that.
Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much. And Will, you told us to plug, is it Monday night? What was the name of the show real quick so we can go?
We have date night on Wednesdays. You came on last night. It was incredible. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I thought he was going to set me up on a blind date. I didn't know what he said.
Ooh,
I was like, what?
I was trying.
I told you I'm going to take a woman out here. What you trying to get me? I thought he was trying to revamp
Cheers.
He's trying to do a Cheers reboot. I was like, what's going on right now?
Oh, it was so funny. It was so funny. And then we have Monday Night Madness on Monday night with Professor Pop Culture Roy Boyd. Man, we'll take an artist and just 1 hour. It's 3 hours of madness, 3 hours of fun. Check it out on the Bud.
Yes.
And coming up right now.
I love to plug those shows. Yes. Oh, real quick. Next show, we're going to do an R&B choir show. We're going to have Naima, and I think we're joined by Mr. Lee Treble and some more people. But make sure y'all tune in every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 to 8 Central Standard Time, and 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. We'll be back next week. We out, y'all.
That's
y'all
right. And coming up right after this, Mr. Madness, right after Mr. Justin C. Gilbert all night, Mr. Melody is coming with his show. Hey, this Vintage Blues and Jazz on the Buzz. Enjoy. The Soul Savage Show.
Atlanta's own. Bitch. When I see you, I'm going to tell you, baby. feel it. Keeping sexy will be popping all night, all night. Sexy all night. We can keep it lit. We'll be happy, make it special tonight, all night. Sexy all night. All night. Sexy all night. All night, keep it sexy all night. All night, sexy all night. All night, sexy all night. She's a bad mamacita. I'ma strike the visa. Taking trips to Ibiza. Sipping margaritas. All them fellas wanna meet her. Bonita señorita. Shorty bad like Nia. Bad like Nia. Let me see you pop it like the Draco. Shake it like you trying to get this bankroll. Dance in the party like a rock star. Shake it like this is your favorite song. We can make it lit. Keep it sexy. We'll be popping all night, all night. Sexy all night. We can keep it lit. We'll be happy. Make it special tonight, all night. Sexy all night, all night, all night. Sexy all night, all night, all night. Keep it sexy all night, all night. Sexy all night, all night. Sexy all night.
Yeah, like you ain't no money, nervous on the 10. We gon' smoke that, sip that hen. We blowin' foreign bands. She wanna party for the whole weekend.
She's a bad mamacita. Bonita señorita, shout it bad like Nia, bad like Nia. Let me see you pop it like the Draco. Shake it like you trying to get this bankroll. Dance in the party like a rock star. Shake it like this is your favorite song. We can make it lit, keep it sexy. We'll be popping all night, all night. Sexy all night. We can keep it lit. We'll be happy, make it special tonight, all night. Sexy all night. All night. Sexy all night. All night. Keep it sexy all night.